every turn of life, I'm linked to God. And everything that has ever been mine is mine forever.
Elizabeth Elliot says that God knows the end from the beginning. He loves us, He is wise, He's powerful, and He calls us to put our faith in Him, to set our feet on that rock which will never move. Welcome to Gateway to Joy, a ministry of Elizabeth Elliot. As you put your faith in the solid rock, study the unchanging word with us today. Here's Elizabeth Elliot.
You are loved with an everlasting love. That's what the Bible says, and underneath are the everlasting arms. This is Elizabeth Elliot, talking with you today about growth in God. I was telling you a little bit about the cottage, that wonderful old family vacation place in Franconia, New Hampshire. When it went on the market for the first time, it was a great sorrow to all of us. And things have changed drastically around there. The big field that used to be in front of our house has now grown up with trees, and we understand that it's going to be chopped into four building lots. So there will be four houses right beside our porch, practically. And it doesn't bear thinking about except in terms of God Himself. And I try to learn to refer everything to God instead of sinking into a swamp of nostalgia and sentimentality. I think about the fact that at every turn of life, I'm linked to God. And everything that has ever been mine is mine forever. Because once a thing is given to God, you can never lose it. And our joy and all that that cottage meant to us is part of what the Lord gave to us. And He gives it not to take it away forever, but to keep it for us in some mysterious way, I believe, in heaven. There are going to be a lot of surprises when we get there. F.W.H. Meyer's poem, St. Paul, ends with these words, which are sort of a watchword in my life. So through life, death, through sorrow, and through sinning, He shall suffice me, for He hath sufficed. Christ is the end, for Christ was the beginning. Christ the beginning, for the end is Christ. Those words came to me when I received the final word that my husband Jim Elliot was dead after waiting 5 days, knowing that the men were missing. Through life, death, through sorrow, and through sinning, He shall suffice me, for He hath sufficed. And so we give thanks and we bring these things to Him. And in the giving of thanks, we signal our total acceptance of His will. Now I want to tell you a little bit more about that cottage and why it meant so much to us. I'm sure that many of you have a place very dear to you on earth, filled with memories, nostalgia, and you really can't bear to see changes. That's one of the signs of old age, isn't it? That change becomes more difficult to take. I loved the attic. It was a real attic, unfinished, with the beams exposed and a sloping roof and very dark corners. There were 2 bedrooms up there, which originally had served as servants' rooms for Aunt Annie Slauson and Uncle Will Prime, the two who lived there in that house. And the furnishings of those bedrooms were a little bit cheaper than the furnishings downstairs. Each bedroom had a big double bed, a dresser, a cheap dresser at that time, and I suppose it would bring a fairly good price now as an antique, but not a very attractive light wood dresser, and then a matching washstand, a wooden washstand, just a little chest on which were set a china pitcher and bowl and soap dish, and underneath in a little door, you open a little door, there was a chamber pot matching the basin and the pitcher and the soap dish. Well, there were chamber pots and soap dishes and basins and pitchers that also brought a good price at some antique dealers, I'm sure, because I understand that they were stolen a few years ago out of the cottage. But that's what I think of when I think of those attic rooms. And then the thing that I most remember was my Aunt Anne's photos. She had a whole long string of black and white photos from her college days. We used to call it her Rogues Gallery. And they were all photos of her girl colleagues, classmates, every single one of them wearing her hair with demure waves sort of sweeping down over her forehead. Every one of them in those days seemed to me very ill-fitting blouses, but nowadays, with all this ridiculous oversized business, I don't suppose they would look ill-fitting at all. Fashions always come full circle, don't they? They had bland, trustful, mild faces, these girls, as Anne called them. To me, of course, they were old ladies. As a child, a 20-year-old would be an old lady. Under the eaves of the attic, there was the cutest little stage trunk that Aunt Annie would use when she traveled by stagecoach, and there were some black silk dresses. There were pictures of Aunt Annie dressed in black silk dresses with just the hint of a smile, as enigmatic as the Mona Lisa. There were some fascinating old woodcuts, very large framed woodcuts of Adam and Eve with Satan and cherubs and stallions and very obese ladies. And my brothers and I would crawl back in there and study those woodcuts, and I think we discovered later why they were in the attic rather than hung downstairs where Aunt Annie and Uncle Will had first put them, because these beings, celestial and terrestrial, were, according to our parents, not adequately clothed. Then there were the tiny brown field mice. They were my friends. I used to lie prone on the floor of the attic by the holes where the electrical wires came up from below. I would lie so still that I could hardly breathe, and I would wait sometimes for 20 minutes, half an hour at a time, until the tiny brown field mice would appear in those holes with their delicate little pink feet and their twitching whiskers and their tiny beady eyes. Behind the cottage was a beautiful pine grove of trees with a trail carpeted with pine needles. I remember my grandparents taking me for walks in the woods. My grandpa would sit down on one of the circular benches that encircled a pine tree built by Uncle Will Prime. He would invite me to sit down, and then on the ground in front of him he would build tiny little twig houses, little lean-tos made out of twigs of the pine trees, and then we would make a little thatched roof with the pine needles and pretend that there were elves or fairies living in that house. If we followed the trail to its end, we came to what Uncle Will and Aunt Annie had named the meeting of the waters. Two rivers came together, Pond Brook and Gale River, very small rivers. You would call them streams, I guess, shallow, with icy, cold, clear water running over beautifully colored stones, brown and blue and slate-colored and white stones. We would wade across Gale River to a place where there was a huge rock that we always called the Big Rock. That was capitalized in our minds. And it belonged to us, as far as we were concerned. Actually, it did not belong to us. It was not on our property. But in those days, nobody else was ever there. And we would go and swim at the foot of that big rock where there was a nice deep hole. And suckers, huge fish, huge compared to trout. My brothers were always looking for trout. But very often they would catch these suckers. They might be 20 inches, occasionally 2 feet long, with a big sucker mouth, slow-moving creatures. And we would swim there and then climb up onto this sun-warmed rock and sun ourselves. My younger Aunt Anne, not the Aunt Anne who built the cottage, took me out into the woods and taught me the wildflowers. We also went out into the meadows and sometimes climbed a mountain. I got a little notebook from the dime store, and in it I pressed cinq foil, Quaker lady, twin flower, orchids, lady slipper, devil's paintbrush, a flower called butter and eggs, goldenrod, and then Anne taught me about the hairy cap moss, that beautiful moss that has a little spike that sticks up with a tiny little hairy cap. And if you lifted that tiny little hairy cap inside, you would find something that looked like a tiny little green salt shaker. And that had a tiny little lid that you could lift off, and you could shake out of it pollen, or spores, I guess perhaps it would be called if it's a kind of moss. I taught my younger brothers and sisters about the hairy cap moss, and I've had great pleasure in showing hairy cap moss to my grandchildren as well. These were our woods, our river, our rock. I still can remember the smell of the cold brook running over the clean stone, the sun on the pine needles. It was wilderness to us, romantic wilderness with no trails. Maybe there were deer there. Maybe there were bears. We never saw them. We hoped. But now, if you go back to the old cottage and walk down the trail through the woods, you're going to smell charbroiled steaks. The trees have grown up. The noise of traffic has increased to a deafening roar. You'll find hot pink plastic surveyor's marks tied to the bushes here and there. You'll find styrofoam cups in the brook, and you'll hear transistor radios. There's a campground there now. Those people don't lie in the dark and look at the moon over Lafayette and listen to the sound of the water over the stones as I did. They pump up pressure lanterns, hook up trailers, wade across our brook, lie on our rock, toss their beer cans down where the trout used to be. But am I deprived of what I had? Not if what Amy Carmichael says is true. All that was ever ours is ours forever. It was one of the stations in my life. That cottage, those woods, those meadows, those mountains shaped my tastes, my loves, aroused my imagination, and helped me to understand who God was. Thou shalt remember all the way that the Lord thy God led thee. That's what I try to do when I think of the passage of time. I'm growing in him as I move steadily and faithfully from one station to the next. And remember, he is at every stopping place.
You've been listening to Gateway to Joy with Elizabeth Elliott, author of over 20 books, including Shadow of the Almighty, The Life and Testament of Jim Elliott. Join us next time for more encouragement and challenge from Elizabeth Elliott. This has been a production of the Bible Broadcasting Network.